Accession number 24189 reel 3.
Mr. Carter, reel 3. We're talking about when you joined HMS Goodall. Now, you joined in Bangor Bay, Northern Ireland.
Yes.
What were you doing? What was the first period? Was the Goodall doing? What was its sort of role?
Well, all Goodall was doing at the time was waiting to be allocated a convoy. And shortly after I joined, we set sail on protecting a convoy. Went across the Atlantic to, this was in February, very rough, and we went across the Atlantic to Argentia in Newfoundland.
Now, what was it like? Firstly, you'd not been to sea really before.
No.
How did you take to it, to seasickness, things like that? And what about the ships rolling? Because they had
it was unbelievable. I was violently sick within the first hour or so, but I wasn't physically sick after that. I just felt sick in the head. But the waves were horrendous. The ship rolled so much it seemed as if it was rolling over and was straining to get back. It was horrendous. Everything in the wireless office, things that should have been stowed away that were left out, just flew off the top of the code books, all flew off the top of the wireless sets. And I was with I was the ordinary telegraphist, and the other chap was the telegraphist, and we had a bucket between us, and we were taking it in turns between messages to be sick. But it really was rough. And I never ate anything. I wouldn't eat anything. And I was just drinking, I couldn't drink the tea, I just drank OXO. And just used to go to the galley and get a cup of hot water and make an OXO drink. But it was really rough.
How long did that last for?
It lasted for a few days. And then we got to Argentia. And Argentia was a huge American Army and Navy base that had been hacked out of the frozen waste, virtually. And it was out of this world. The facilities and the comforts were out of this world. It was unbelievable.
Did you get ashore there?
Yes, we were ashore. We were there for about 5 days, and we went ashore. And in this base, there was a bus service on a circular tour. It did a circuit, and you just hopped onto the bus and got off wherever you wanted to, and then got back on and went somewhere else. And they got bowling alley, cinemas, clubs, coffee bars, canteens, everything that you could possibly think you would need. Amazing.
Now, by now you must have been getting to know some of your crewmates. Who sticks out in your mind? Probably amongst the ones you mix with most would be the communications, the coders and the telegraphers.
The coders and the telegraphers. The coders and the telegraphers, but I had three very good friends. Well, that I used to spend my leave with in. We became very close.
So who were they? Now tell me a bit about each of them, so try and preserve the memories.
Well, Tommy Daniels, he was a Huffduffer. And I went to his wedding 6 months before we were sunk. He lived in Bow. Then there was...
What was he like?
Well, he was a very likeable chap, but unfortunately he was prone to severe seasickness. And if we were in harbour, tied up alongside, and the engine started up, he used to be sick. He went green, and he used to be sick. Then there was Bernard Cobb. He came from East Ham.
Was he another telegraphist?
Another telegraphist. He was a Huffduffer. He was a smashing chap.
What was Bernard Cobb like?
Wow.
As a chap?
No, he was just a marvellous chap. A great friend. It's unbelievable. And the other one was Sid Civil. He was a signalman, and he was my opposite number. He was a T.O. signalman, and I was a T.O. sparker. We got on like house of fire. And when we used to come home on leave, I used to spend my leave in London with those three. Unfortunately, they were all killed.
And what about your other characters in the thing? Who was your petty officer?
Oh, George Finlay.
What was he like?
He was marvellous. He was he'd been at university, and he left university to join the Navy. Very intelligent chap. A strict Roman Catholic. He didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he didn't swear. But never condemned anybody who did. And he was a most likeable chap. And, you know, to have somebody like that in charge was marvellous. And
any other petty officers or leading signalmen or telegraphers?
There was a leading signalman. He was a carpet salesman in peacetime. He was quite a nice chap. My coder, Guy Williams, he was the coder in my watch. He was a leading coder, but he was still under me in the watch because the telegraphist took charge of the watch.
What was Guy Williams like?
Well, he was very nervous because he'd had an unfortunate experience. He was on a converted banana boat in the Bay of Biscay when it was attacked by a Fokker Wolf. And it machine gunned the ship. And he ran to one side, and this Fokker Wolf came down and machined the other. And he was dodging from side to side while this Fokker Wolf was machining. They abandoned ship, but then eventually the ship was still afloat, so they rebolded it. But it shot his nerves completely.
How did it show itself to you, you know?
Well, he used to pace the wireless. When he hadn't got any work to do, he used to pace the wireless office, you know, backwards and forwards, like a cat on hot bricks. And when it came to top time, which was usually 12 o'clock, and the others used to have their tots, if he was on watch, you couldn't get your tot until 12:30 when he came off watch. He used to ask me if he could go down and get his tot half an hour early, because he couldn't wait until 12:30, and he used to go down and get his tot, and then he was calm. Yeah. And he used to say to me, if anything ever hits this ship, we've had it. He had got no confidence in the armament of the ship or anything. He said, a 303 could sink us.
And what about the officer, the signal officer?
Knocker White.
What was his real name? It's White with a Y, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know his... You called him Knocker, did you?
Well, all Whites are called Knockers. Yeah. His name was Robert White, yeah.
And what was he like as an officer?
Well, he was a former school teacher, I think, and he treated us like a school teacher would treat his pupils. He was a very nice chap, but he was very nervous, and when he was on watch, we never slept very well, because when he was the officer of the watch, because he used to panic. And I know this because Sid Seville, the signalman, my friend, used to tell me what happened, you know. And the captain would creep up onto the bridge and shout, "Toasty starboard!" And poor old Knocker White would run one side of the ship and back across the other side before he issued an order. So he was quite nervous. He was quite a nice chap, but he was very nervous. And when they used to say, "Who's got the middle? Who's got the middle watch?" And if we said Knocker, they'd say, "Oh." Didn't sleep easy.
Any other officer? What about the captain? Who was? Do you remember his name?
Yeah, captain. Yeah. Fulton. Fulton, his name was.
F-U-L-T-O-N.
Yeah.
What was he like?
He wasn't very popular.
Why not?
Well, he was an upper class person, and he didn't communicate very well with the lower deck.
What do you mean?
Well, he It's difficult to say, really, but he wasn't very popular. He wasn't in any way friendly, or he was very aloof.
What about the first lieutenant? I don't know who that...
Oh, the first lieutenant, that was Dalloway.
Dalloway?
Dalloway, yeah. He was not a bad chap. He came up through the ranks. He wasn't a graduate or anything like that. He just joined the Navy and worked his way up to a first lieutenant. He wasn't a bad chap.
Any other officers come to mind?
No, not really. We didn't really have much to do with the officers. They were sort of apart from us. We only, our main contact was with the signal officer.
Well, would you say it was a, you know, its early days, was it a happy ship? Or can you explain what a happy ship is, perhaps, you know?
Well, I would say that the Honeysuckle was a happy ship. From meeting the people and going to their reunions and everything else, I would say the Honeysuckle was a happy ship. I wouldn't say our ship was a happy ship. It wasn't happy. It was as happy as you made it. But I wouldn't say it was a happy ship. No.
Was it an unhappy ship, though?
Neither one thing nor the other, really. It was just a ship that, and you were all in the same boat, and that was it, you know. But I wouldn't call it a happy ship.
Now, you're on we were just sort of picked that up from the thing. What about the food on board ship, you know, as you were going out across the Atlantic? What system of messing did they have, and what were you being served up with?
It was general messing. In other words, it was cooked in the galley and dished out to all the different messes.
Who prepared it?
The cooks.
So there was no cook of the mess?
No. The cook of the mess, all the cook of the mess did was to go to the galley to get the food.
So what was the food like? What would you get on a typical day?
I can't remember what we got, but it wasn't very good. I can remember the bread. When we went to sea, we used to take 10 days' supply of bread, and that would be put in the bread locker. And our mess, there were 18 men in our mess, and we used to get 2.5 loaves of bread a day. Now, the first couple of days, the bread was okay, but then the bread used to go mouldy. I mean, because we were at sea, and I suppose the sea air and everything else. And so, as the bread got mouldy, when you got a slice of bread, by the time you cut away the mould, you just had a small slice of bread because you'd thrown a lot of it away. But after 10 days, they used to go into ship's biscuits. And these ship's biscuits were in tins and they'd issue them out. And I used to look forward to the day when we finished with the mouldy bread, had these ship's biscuits, because you could munch those to your heart's content, you know. And they used to stave off seasickness as well.
What were they like?
Well, they were hard biscuits. After the war, I was walking down a street in Gravesend and I saw a notice outside a pet shop window and it said, Naval biscuits suitable for pets.
So they were like dog biscuits?
They were like dog biscuits.
But you quite liked them?
I quite liked them, yes.
Did you have to have good teeth?
I mean, yes.
And what other food? I mean, I know you don't remember it too well.
Well, I can remember you get some bacon and tinned tomatoes all swimming around in a dish. You'd get some fish in sort of greasy water. The potatoes were stored on the upper deck, and so was the greens. Well, with the sea water coming over and washing up against, all the potatoes were black. Once you peeled them, they were black potatoes. And the greens were just a slimy mess, because the seawater just used to make a mess of them. And the only other thing I can remember about the food was herrings in. Herrings in tomato sauce. We used to call them herrings in, tins of them. And we used to get these. And when I left the Navy, I swore I would never eat another herrings in. For tea, we used to get a plate of jam for the mess, a slice of bread, and a cup of tea. That was for tea. And then you had supper when you got something else. So you had breakfast, lunch at lunchtime. Well, they called it dinner. Lunch, dinner, tea and supper. But the food wasn't very good.
And supper you'd get, what might you get then?
Well, anything. Just cottage pie or macaroni or anything.
So not good.
Well, it wasn't good. I didn't think it was good. No.
What about other rations? Rum ration. Did you take the rum ration?
Well, once I was 20, yes.
How was it issued?
Well, the cook of the mess would take what they called a metal fanny, a metal kettle, would take that up to the upper deck, and the coxswain and the officer of the day would serve out this rum for the ordinary people. It was two parts water to one part rum, and he would bring it down, and then it would be his job to divide it between 18 people. Very precise, because if there was one drip in one, somebody got more than one drip in another drip, there'd be trouble. So it was a very precise measurement.
Was it good stuff? I mean, did it help?
Oh, it was, yeah. Well, the thing I found about it was after I had my tot, I could eat my dinner. But if I hadn't, I don't think I could have done.
Was there any way of saving them up?
No, you're not allowed to. No, that was taboo, that was.
What about any other ration, cigarette ration? Did you smoke?
No, I've never smoked in my life.
No, that's quite unusual then. It's not so unusual now, but did you stand out as not smoking then, or did you not?
Well, I was the tobacco baron in our mess. You see, each mess used to go down to the naffy cubby hole. We had a cubby hole, they called it a canteen, but it was just like a little cubby hole, and draw the cigarettes for the mess. So I used to go down and draw the cigarettes for the mess, which would be 20 packets. Although they were only 18 in the mess, so they used to give us a carton of 20. And I used to sell them to whoever wanted to buy them. While we were at sea, lots of people didn't smoke because they were seasick. So all those cigarettes, I used to save up and keep them in my suitcase. And then when we got to harbour, the dockyard mates would come aboard and say, had anybody got any cigarettes to sell? Because cigarettes were in short supply in Civvy Street. So, and they used to pay 1 shilling and 6 pence per packet. Well, the cigarettes either cost me 4 pence halfpenny, 4.5 pence or 6 pence. So I used to make quite a profit on the cigarettes.
And you were trusted with them? With the other men's cigarettes, you didn't just draw your, you drew everybody's.
Yeah, I drew everybody's, and
they trusted you because you didn't smoke.
That's right. Yeah.
Did most of the rest of them smoke generally? Yeah. Then yeah. Not at sea. I know.
No, most of them did. Yeah.
Anything else you remember about any other rations or things you were issued with?
No, you could get one or two things down in the canteen. You could get packets of biscuits and things like that.
What was the canteen that? That's a ship canteen. Was there a little canteen on ship?
Well, it's a mistake to call it a canteen because you couldn't go into it. It was a cubby hole, really, where they issued the stuff through this flap to anybody who went there. It wasn't a canteen as such. You couldn't go and sit in it or anything like that. It was just room for one person to be in there, the naffy manager, canteen manager.
And they sell biscuits?
Yeah, biscuits and things, you know, just odds and ends and things that you might need, toothpaste, toothbrushes, cotton, you know, anything like that, sundries.
What about, did you, as I know you're a signal person, but did you have a role in cleaning the ship or cleaning your mess? How far did the cleaning duties go, or was that these?
You had to keep your own mess clean, you had to have a clean hammock every week, you had to scrub the hammocks, you had to keep your mess clean. The WT office people were responsible for cleaning the WT office every day and also the WT office flat. And
how would you clean it? I mean, was this scrubbing deck?
Yeah, scrubbing it, yeah. Yeah.
Any other duties you had?
No, I don't think so.
We haven't actually mentioned. Did you have a differentiation between your sort of cruising stations and action stations? I mean,
oh yeah.
Can you tell us about that? What was your cruising station? Because would that not just be where you were rostered?
That's right. Yeah, the cruising stations was you're just carrying out your normal duties, but action stations. They used to have action stations dawn and dusk, irrespective of whether you'd been on the middle watch from 12 till. From midnight till 4 in the morning. If dusk action stations were at 6 o'clock, you were turned out and you were up on action stations.
Now, what was your action station?
My action stations was in the wireless office. But I had to be there. Everybody had to be closed up within a minute and reported to the bridge. And the reason I had to move quickly was because the person that I relieved had to go to his action station.
And where was that?
Wherever.
Not all the telegraphists would have their action stations in the wireless office.
It just
happened to be that you did.
Because I was a senior telegraphist, you see. And the senior coder, the leading coder would be there, and one of the ODs, ordinary telegraphists. But everybody else would go, they'd be anywhere. They could be in the sick bay, they could be where Bill Bates was, down on the emergency transmitter receiver.
That's further back.
Further back the ship, or they could be on the magazines, like, you know, the supply party for their guns.
Now, so you got to, we were sort of looking at various things. You were on this first convoy. Anything about the journey back? We escorting ships back, I presume?
We did escort ships back. There's one thing I'd like to tell you about going on the first convoy. My action stations was the sick bay. And when I first went on board ship, my action station was the sick bay on our first trip. So I went down to the sick bay when they called action stations, and the sick bay Tiffy said to me, "Do you know anything about first aid?" And I said, "No." He said, "Oh, that's probably for the better." So he said, "All you've got to remember is this. If somebody's cut their finger, you attend to them. If they've lost their leg, you leave them until later." Because, he said, the person who's cut his finger can go back on do his duty, but the person who's lost his leg can't. I mean, this was a bit frightening to me, talking about losing legs and things like that. So he showed me how to give them morphia, how to apply a tourniquet, and then we set off on the convoy, and the convoy action stations went, and I was down in the stoker's mess deck, which is where the sick bay was, all on my own, because his action station was on the bridge. And I'm sitting in this empty mess deck, and I could hear bangs and depth charges going off, and I heard the captain say, "A tanker has just been torpedoed on our ports, on the port side of the convoy." And then a little later on, he said, "A tanker has just been torpedoed on the starboard side of the convoy." And I was terrified of down in this, you know, but it was a bit frightening, really, because as I got more senior on the ship, then my action station became the WT office, which I was a lot happier.
So nothing much happened on the way back?
No.
And what happened next then? I mean, you weren't on that long before you got rated as a telegraphist,
yeah,
proper.
That's right.
I mean, this is what you were talking about before.
Yeah, I had to be there 3 months sea tight, get 3 months sea service in before I could be rated as a telegraphist.
And was there any sort of any more examinations? Or what did that mean, in effect, when you were rated as a telegraphist?
Well, it meant when I was rated as a telegraphist that my pay went up from 3 shillings a day to 4 and threepence a day, which was a huge jump. Well, then the next exam I took was for a trained operator, TEL-TO, and I took that on the day after D-Day, after we came back from D-Day.
Well, we best go through. So what happened after the first convoy in February then?
Well, then we just did various convoys, and we went to Iceland 3 times, we went to Gibraltar once.
What were you doing when you went to Iceland?
Well, we took, there were 2 ships, us and the Bullen, we'll say, and we took a liner, one of these big passenger liners up to Iceland. And on board were reliefs for the Army and the Air Force and the Navy that were stationed in Iceland. And we went flat out because we couldn't keep up with these liners, really. We hadn't got the speed, but we went flat out as fast as we could. But the seas were horrendous. And we used to, when we came back, we used to have to go in for a refit because we got hammered so much. The lids would be torn off the ready-use ammunition lockers. Steel lockers, but the lids would just be ripped off. The breakwater on the forecastle would be smashed down, and we were generally in poor condition, so we had to go in for a refit. Going to the dockyard hands for 3 weeks.
And what about when you went down to Gibraltar? What was that about?
Well, we were taking a convoy down.
Anything happen, or was it routine?
No, it was just routine. Nothing, very much.
What would you do when you were ashore? Where were you based? Weren't you based at Liverpool?
Well, sometimes we transferred to Liverpool from Northern Ireland. We were at Londonderry in Northern Ireland. We were based there for a while, and then we were based at Liverpool, Gladstone Dock, Liverpool.
And what would you do when you were in dock, in port, either at Londonderry or Liverpool, depending which one you remember best?
What do you mean, what would we do? When we were off duty?
Yeah, when you're off, you know.
Oh, just go for a drink and a sing-song and anything like that.
Did you drink much at the time?
Yeah, a fair amount. Not enough to get drunk, but we used to drink a fair amount because...
What, do you mean 4 or 5 pints?
Yeah, and just having a social evening, really. We'd probably go into a pub and there'd probably be a piano there and a sing-song, and that's what it was like.
Was there any trouble with the locals? I mean, in Liverpool?
Never, I never came across any trouble, no. Never had any trouble at all.
And what about your leave? Did you get leave, or how often did you get proper leave, you know?
We used to get proper leave now and again, but and I used to come home on leave, and I used to spend it in London with my 3 friends. But when the V1s were coming over, they stopped our leave for 8 months because they wouldn't let us come to London in case we couldn't get back. They stopped the Londoners' leave, you see, so we might not be able to get back. And it took quite a while before they relaxed that. But they did eventually relax it. And I came home on leave, and I said to... and these doodlebugs were still coming over. I said to my sister, if one of those doodlebugs comes over, call me, I want to see one, you see. Well, I heard what I thought was a motorcycle go past, but it happened to be one of these doodlebugs. So then, and she said, did you see it? I said, no, I didn't realise it was a doodlebug. So the next one that came over, we went outside in the garden, saw this doodlebug coming along, chug, 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 and the motor stopped, and I turned around to my sister and said, what do we do now? And she'd gone. She'd gone, vanished, because they used to cut out and then glide and land and explode.
And how far away from you was it?
I've no way of telling, probably a quarter of a mile or something like that, but it was just that she knew the procedure, you see. She knew that you had to get under cover.